it's time to listen to the interviews from Island Life on Saturday the 26th of February 2011. Island Life is our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. It's brought to you every Saturday morning from 10 till 12 by Island, stockist of Waiheke's most eclectic collection of local gifts, art and clothing. On Saturday the 26th of February, Emma Bowell-Warner talked to James the Gardener, Rhiannon from Waiheke Library, Cindy Peterkin, the drama tutor, and Gary Wilton from Auckland Council.
Welcome to the studio, James, from Green Space Landscape. How are you?
Very well, thank you, Emma.
Come a bit nearer to the microphone, yes. My friend. He's a bit scared this morning. He stood in the doorway for 10 minutes talking to me. I was like, well, are you staying? Before he sat down.
I'm going to stay for at least 5-10 minutes, is that right?
Oh, 5-10 minutes, are you sure?
Tight schedule this morning.
Oh, tight. Are we busy, are we?
Yes.
Yeah, do you know why he's busy, everybody? Because he's told me. Shall I tell? I think I've got to tell him now.
Yes.
He did one of those man things. Oh, that's not working very well. So I think I'll take the front door lock apart because it'll only take me 2 minutes to put it back together because I'm so handy.
Mm.
And how long have you been working on it?
Well, it sort of took me about, I'm up to about an hour now and I'm suddenly deciding that maybe the expertise of a locksmith... I have to find a locksmith or find a new lock.
So it'll be a trip to Placemakers after here then, will it?
So I've created a bit of work for myself today.
Oh, well done, well done. Typical. It's a bit like at home when I ask my other half to do jobs and I say, oh, look, it'll only take like 5-10 minutes. Mm. And he says, yeah, is that 5-10 minutes in real time or in Emma time?
Yeah.
Because actually it's going to take several hours, but I'm like, oh, you can do that quickly. But anyway, you've done the opposite of that. Anyway, enough of that. Let's talk plants. So how's business been? How have you been? Have you been pretty busy?
Oh, very busy, Emma. I've just finished one job. I've done over 2 or 3 weeks, done an outside shower pad with planting and screens and a raised lawn.
A raised lawn.
So, as with most properties on Waiheke, everything's on a bit of a slant. I've had to retain an area of about 30 square metres and then turf it with lawn. And it's come out really nicely. So I'm very happy with that job.
Excellent. Did you make any funky steps? Like he's made some very funky steps for our property, actually, which kind of slope into the bank and slope around with the bank, which is very good. Mm. Have you made any of more of those recently?
Not recently, but I've made some pavers, some stepping stones, and they quite a nice stepping stone actually. It's a basalt paver, which I got from town, and they're very very hardy, and once you seal them, they look really nice. It's sort of a bit different to the local stone, but more in keeping with sort of Auckland stone.
So they're a bit
colourings.
Are you saying that they're a bit trendier?
Well, not trendy, just different.
Just different. Mm, different's good.
Yeah, different's good.
So, anyway, where are we up to for this month? What do you want to talk to us about, other than your failed attempts at being a handyman that I had to tease you about?
My bad locksmithing. I'm actually talking about March, and I'm going to talk about what's coming up and what sort of things we can do in the garden. And I want to talk about transplanting a tree. Some people, I know that most people in the garden will at one time think that a tree can be moved, and I want to talk a little bit about that and some of the sort of the more successful ways of doing that.
Okay.
And I want to talk about plant of the month, which I'm sure people will identify if they're wandering around Waiheke today or over the weekend, which is, I think, set to be quite a nice weekend.
Well, it was due to rain. I don't know what's happened with that. Fingers crossed that's disappeared. Okay, well,
yes,
get cracking.
Okay, well, what we've got here is, some people might be thinking, well, gosh, it's getting a bit drier in the garden, and we're thinking about March, and some of the things that you might want to be doing in March, obviously, we've had a harvesting in February. A lot of people have had some quite successful tomatoes and some of the sort of warmer variety vegetables, cucumbers and what have you. And so now you're heading into March, and if you're thinking about sort of more towards the ornamentals of your garden, and you're thinking about planning ahead for spring, it's certainly a time as the rains come and the weather gets a bit, the soil gets a bit wetter too. You could think about the daffodils, freesias, irises and tulips. So if you're ready for you want to have a bit more colour in your garden in spring, then that should be something you could be thinking about now.
Mm-hmm. And they go well in pots as well, don't they? The tulips and irises.
Absolutely,
sure.
Yeah. No, it's you know, it's not just about putting in the ground. You can certainly put them in pots too. Mm. So the other thing too, with the rain that we're going to get, fingers crossed, and probably not as heavy as hopefully not as heavy as what we've had, you'll be looking at fertilising your garden as well. So getting and giving your garden a chance to have a late autumn growth. And one of the ways you can encourage the growth also in conjunction with the fertilising is to give things a bit of a trim. So for example, I know a lot of people have hedges and what have you around their property, as opposed to fences, which is I think that's a good idea.
Oh, it's much nicer, yeah, for sure. It's much nicer to have a natural, if you need to have a barrier, then make it a natural barrier if you possibly can,
Absolutely. So yeah, so it's about tipping and trimming your hedges again, just to give them one final final training for that late autumn growth.
Talking about that, actually, I've got a question for you then.
Sure.
We have I don't know what it is. It's some sort of bush that has it was on next door. It's on sort of the boundary of our property and next door's property just below us. Mm-hmm. And when we bought the property 5 years ago, it's quite small. Now it's kind of turned into a bit of a triffid. Mm. I am a bit worried about leaving the window open at night when I'm going to sleep in case the tendrils come and grab me. Mm. But on a serious note, it is starting to spread out. Well, it's absolutely huge now. It's way bigger than me, and it's spreading along the ground. If I trim that now, will that encourage it to grow?
Probably.
Ah, yeah. So it's probably not a good, because I was thinking, you know, in my spare time, one weekend quite soon, I will trim it. Mm. But you don't think that's probably a good idea now? Should I wait?
Mm. Well, I mean, if you don't want it there, then I'd suggest you, you know, chop it down at the base. And if it's a very woody plant, then you could paint it with a herbicide.
I don't want to kill it. I don't want to remove it. I just want to make it more manageable, because it's sort of grown across a bit of a fence, which is great that it's sort of hiding that wire. Mm. But I just wondered when is the right time to prune it?
Well, now. I mean, if you want to train it and you want to keep it, then I'd certainly trim it. And then obviously you're going to have to trim it again. But
sure. It won't last forever.
No, it won't last forever. It's an ongoing thing.
Oh, that's where I go wrong with the gardening thing. I plant them and leave them and think that's it.
Yep. No. It's constant, as many people know. So
yeah. But people with a brain. Thanks, James.
No, that's all right. But I mean, if you're thinking long term, well, you're really going to give it a trim now, and after that autumn flush of growth, then everything's going to slow down anyway.
Sure.
So in wintertime, you know, there's not so much of that to do. It's the spring and the autumn and what have you. So the other thing I was going to talk about too was looking at preparing lawns. So if people are looking at a dirty patch of area, then it might be a good idea to try and think about what sort of areas you might want to overseed to create a new lawn. Some of the lawn areas some of the seed you could use in those areas would be fine fescue for shady areas, tall fescue for sort of more open, and they're both quite hardy, in fact. And the other thing to do with your lawn area is do not create a big flat surface. Obviously, that's just you want to have a flat lawn, but there is something called crowning, and crowning means that you create almost a camber on your lawn. So You don't get those horrible big puddles in the middle, which can happen. So, I mean, if you're a footballer and you've ever, for example, if you ever watched a match from ground level, you'll notice that a pitch is never flat. It's sort of curvy. So that's what you've got to try and create if you're going to create a lawn, unless you want a water feature in the middle.
Which most of us, let's say, we don't.
No, absolutely not.
Yeah.
So, The other thing I wanted to talk about today was transplanting a tree. And transplanting a tree, for many people, some people go, that's one of the questions that people ask me the most. They say, well, can we transplant this? Can we cut it back first? Or do we have to cut it back first? And they're usually a really big tree. And one of the things that I need to stress to people about this is that when you're transplanting a tree, you've got to make sure that you've actually got to do a bit of planning, and you've actually got to make sure that you dig around the base of the tree. So, for example, if you want to move a big tree, it's over 2 or 3 months that you So it's something called wrenching, and the process first of all starts with digging a trench around the base of the root system, and about half a meter deep, depending on the size of the tree, sort of around about half a metre deep and half a metre out from the base of the trunk. And if you do that, and then you just leave the tree, you're effectively training it preparing it to move, and you're not actually stressing it out as much as digging it out, finding another spot, digging a hole, sticking it in there, and watching it. Because
the roots are very sensitive. So perhaps, so if you dig a trench around, do the roots start to retract slightly, or what do they do?
Well, they'll develop new roots. You're actually training it. It's all like pruning underground, really.
Oh, okay.
So, and certainly, you know, if you've got a really big tree, which is under 3 metres, obviously, because you can't move anything native over 3 metres, just decide where you're going to put it and then set about the process. So if you were to wrench a tree now, do a complete wrenching, then that's probably not a good idea. What I suggest you do is you dig your trench now, and then obviously keep the roots sort of semi-moist around the base, around those trenches, and then in a couple of months' time, then you can actually move it, and you'll probably be a lot more successful.
Do you know that I just read a book recently by David Baldacci entitled Hell's Corner, and I actually reviewed it on the Anything Arty show. But the start of the book, there is a big tree in Lafayette Park opposite the White House, or very near the White House, and they've done exactly that. They had a big trench there, and it was left there for several weeks, in fact maybe 6 weeks or something, and then something happened with it, and that was part of the storyline. But I wondered why they dug that big trench around, because it wasn't explained, because of course it wasn't a book about gardening. But that's interesting, isn't it, when you suddenly go, well, that's why they did that. I mean, it was only a book, it was a novel, but yeah, anyway.
Well, I mean, certainly there must be other techniques out there, but that's certainly one of the most successful techniques, I think, to do.
What about when you replant it? Any tips for how best to do that when you transplant it?
Yeah, in about 2 or 3 months' time, you could, you know, certainly when it's wetter, not too wet, obviously. I mean, the spot you find, you'll need to dig a really big big hole for the root system. I wouldn't squash the roots in altogether. I wouldn't plant the tree and then jump around it with your boots. I'd be quite gentle with the tree. I'd make sure that it's going to. The base of the tree, I wouldn't make it deeper than the ground level.
Right. Yeah.
And also, I'd use a lot of compost. Not raw compost. I'd use sort of maybe potting mix. Of a mixture of nothing too strong. Nothing that was going to burn the roots. And then I'd stake the tree, because what the tree needs to do once it's been transplanted is re-root it. And the only way it can do that successfully is if it doesn't move around in the wind. So you've got to make sure that you stake the tree.
Yes. As I have some trees staked on my property. Green Space Landscape did for me. Yes. Oh. Very good. Very good. Yes.
I'm glad you're happy.
Yeah, very happy. Thank you. Okay. So where are we up to then?
Well, the last thing I want to talk about today is Plant of the Month.
Oh, we do like Plant of the Month. Drum roll.
And Plant of the Month is, which I can only find the common name for at this stage, but I'll certainly see if I can find the botanical name, and that is the Naked Lady.
The Naked Lady. Don't look at me and say that, young man.
The Naked Lady. Always blushing. Yes. So the Naked Lady is something that comes out in late summer, autumn. And
it's a bit chilly. Sorry, no, okay, I'll stop with that now. Family show.
And the reason it's called a Naked Lady is it doesn't have any leaves.
No coverage,
so it's naked, and it only has a stalk and a flush of bloom flowers on top.
Right.
And it just starts coming out around about now. You'll notice that a lot of your, if you've got irises and all sorts of, some people have a whole mixture of stuff down the bottom of their garden, and in old gardens especially, you'll find this rather attractive looking plant popping up. Just one day it's not there, and the next day it is.
And what colour? So
purple and white flowers. It's really quite attractive, and it's something that I noticed, even though we had a really, really dry spell last summer, that was one of the only bits of colour that sort of came out of the late summer period. So the Naked Lady is something probably you could source from somewhere, but it's just something that I think it's sort of quite an interesting plant for the month.
Oh, excellent. So have a look, see if you've actually got any in your own garden, perhaps.
Any Naked Ladies.
Naked Ladies.
Maybe at Little Palm Beach or something.
maybe. Yeah. Okay.
Anyway,
moving on. So, right. Well, excellent. Thank you very much, James, for coming in. Entertaining as ever. And we were just talking earlier about possibly you might start blogging some of this information for us. So we'll look out for that. And if you do, we'll link it in for the Waiheke website. But thanks very much for coming in. I know you're a very busy man and you need to get back to your locksmithing.
I'll just have to let somebody in, I think, very soon. So,
yeah, you're going to have to let somebody in. Absolutely.
Yes.
All right, well, thanks very much. It's been great talking to you as
Thank
always.
You, Emma.
Look forward to it next month. Now, I'd just like to welcome to the studio Rhiannon from the library. Welcome
Hi.
To the studio. Hi.
Thank you.
And what are you going to talk to us about this month?
Well, the main thing we want to focus on is One Island, One Book, which is our big New Zealand Book Month book club that we do.
Yes, because last year it was Sonata for Miriam, wasn't it?
Yes.
We recorded some extracts for you.
Oh, yeah, that was brilliant. Mm. Yeah, we're not quite that ambitious this year.
No, but sadly.
We have got another really good book that we're focusing on. So New Zealand Book Month happens throughout New Zealand, but each area chooses their own book to focus on for it. And we've chosen Settlers Creek by Carl Nixon. And a really big coup is that the author is actually going to come to the event for this one. So people will actually get to meet the author and ask him some questions.
That's really good.
Yeah, no, that's
excellent.
Wonderful.
So tell us about... Well, no, you carry on and tell it how you want.
Okay, well, I just thought I'd introduce Carl Nixon because I'm not sure whether everyone knows who he is. He is one of our great New Zealand up-and-coming writers. I've actually been following his career since 2006 when his collection of short stories, Fish and Chip Shop Song, came out. And I thought then that he was one to watch, and I was proven right the following year when his story, My Beautiful Balloon, won the prestigious Bank of New Zealand Catherine Mansfield Award.
Oh, right, did it?
Yeah,
okay. Definitely.
Did really well with that one. And then the same year, his first novel came out, and that was called Rocking Horse Road. Mm. That one was set in the 1980s, and it explores the impact the murder of a teenage girl has on the community. And interestingly enough, Settlers Creek also focuses on a death of a teenager, only in this case it's a suicide, and the suicide of the teenager is the impetus for the storyline.
Yeah.
So it has already raised a great deal of interest. The critics are either loving it or they're pulling it apart. So
interesting.
Yeah, it's going to be one with a lot for us to talk about,
well,
I think.
It's a very difficult subject matter to tackle.
Yeah, and it brings in other quite difficult subject matters because it becomes the question of burial rights and connection to land and ownership of land and things like that. So it goes into some really profound issues for New Zealand, and some people feel it's gone over the line, and other people think that it's followed the line really carefully. So definitely controversial, and it's definitely one that's going to give a lot of discussion.
Yeah, it's going to raise a lot of discussion, isn't it? And it's have you read anything that he's written about? Because a lot of the time people, if people tackle a controversial topic, one of the first things that the press want to know is why and what connection have they got with it, and is that because they've had some personal, or, you know, that's often something that's asked. Have you read anything about what his rationale, what his motive was for writing about this subject matter?
Yeah, his family, as far as I understand it, have had some issues around land rights, so it has come to an extent out of personal, but I think it's also something that's very very much in the consciousness of people and in these times, and so I think it's
It's definitely a hot
finger
topic
on the pulse.
In fact, you know, I was discussing it with some of the guys at work only a couple of weeks ago. We were talking about land rights and stuff, and they interestingly held different opinions than perhaps not quite so PC opinion, shall we say, and leave it there. And it's quite a difficult conversation, and particularly because for me personally, as a non-Kiwi, as a British person, there were a few comments flying around like, you don't understand, you don't know what you're talking about. And it was like, well, you know, it's a fine line that somebody that's not a Kiwi, a fine line that you have to tread, I think, when you're discussing those highly sensitive issues.
Oh, absolutely.
But anyway, yeah.
Yeah, but I think it would be a shame to overlook the fact that, I mean, because it's very easy for issues to
dominate,
take over a book.
Yeah.
The thing to focus on with this book as well, though, is he is a superb writer.
It's the craftsmanship of the writing.
It's the craftsmanship of the writing, absolutely. It just blows you away. Ooh. And really, really strong character development.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, it's very powerfully written. And I think that's one of the reasons why we ended up choosing it. Because we needed a book that was both going to generate a lot of discussion, have a lot of meat to it that we can talk about. And on the other hand, we also needed one that was a beautiful example of New Zealand writing. So I think we've made a good choice with Settlers Creek.
Excellent. So is that something that Waiheke Library has chosen, or is Auckland?
Right. No, Waiheke Library. That's as a team, we all sat around the table and worked out, we threw ideas around, and that was the one that we chose in the end.
Do you know, I'm just, as talking to you and talking about the book, it's getting my creative juices flowing, and I'm thinking, oh, it's such a shame we haven't agreed to, or arranged to record some extracts for you.
Well, interestingly enough, this time what we've done as a joint event is to have readings of a couple of Carl Nixon's plays.
Yeah.
So those are going to be on in Rocky Bay and at Artworks. The two plays are called Crumpy and Two Fish and a Scoop, and they're going to be on in Rocky Bay Thursday the 10th of March from 7:30 to 9 p.m. and at Artworks Theatre on Saturday the 12th of March from 7:30 to 9 p.m. So that's the
different way it's been approached.
Oops. I'm sure she said Thursday. Okay, so Wednesday the 9th of March in Rocky Bay and Saturday the 12th of March in Artworks Theatre.
That's great.
Now, the book club event, the main opportunity for everyone to get together and have a really good discussion about the book and to meet the author, obviously, is on Thursday the 24th of March. And that's going to be hosted by Ricky's in Onaroa.
Great.
And it's running from 7 until 9 p.m. And Tanya Bett is going to MC it again. She was brilliant last year.
She was. Heard that. Unfortunately, I do my show on the Thursday, so I missed it last year. But I might be able to work something out this year.
Yeah, that'll be good. Yeah. It's definitely worth coming along. Mm. They're going to be 80 tickets, which we're going to pre-sell through the library.
Great.
And they're $15 per person, and that includes a glass of wine or juice and nibbles plates, which are sort of refreshed throughout the evening. So. Yeah.
Excellent. Oh, that sounds really good. And you had a really good turnout last year.
We
didn't
did.
You? It was packed.
Yeah, it was packed. We couldn't have fitted another person in, really.
Yeah,
it was just.
Good job I didn't turn up then, really. It would have been highly embarrassing if I'd been turned away.
Yeah, no way to sit. Yeah, so if people are wanting to come along, we strongly suggest they come and get their tickets.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, in advance if possible, because they probably will go fairly quickly.
I think they will. Now, how about reading the book? Have you got lots of copies available?
We have, yeah. I mean, there's various options. If you want to get a copy of it from the library, we've got quite a lot of copies in stock at the library, but Waiheke Library have also got some informal ones that the publisher has donated, which we're we've got the old fashioned, remember those books, the stamps in the back of the books?
Yes.
And the little, the leaflets. So we've got some of those.
Oh, fantastic.
But you only get a week if you get those ones, so
right. So you have to read it pretty,
you need to be quick. And if you're wanting to actually get a hold of the book yourself to buy, we've got a really good deal at Tivoli and Take Note. They're selling it for a very special price of $19.99.
Oh, that's
so
great.
So that's well worth it if you want to actually
have your own
the book.
Copy, yeah. Yes, because some people like to collect all the books that they read and,
exactly.
and have them. So, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, that's great. Thank you very much for that, Ren. And
cool.
Then I believe you've also got some book reviews for us.
Yeah, I've just got a couple.
Great.
So the first one I wanted to talk about was The Uses of Enchantment by Heidi, I think it's Ulewitz, mm-hmm. You pronounce the surname. And it's a really psychological book. It explores how we weave stories about ourselves and the people around us and the impact that those stories have on our perception of the truth and of each other. And it's about a girl, Mary, who at the age of 16 was abducted. The question is, was she actually abducted? And one of the mysteries that unfolds throughout the book is what the story of what actually happened versus the story that was fabricated around it.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, really fascinating. Her mother and her therapist decided at the time to believe it was a lie. And at the opening of the book, Mary is now a grown woman. And she's become increasingly lost in the complex web of story and counter-story. So gradually, through flashbacks throughout the book, you start to see the story that unfolded between Mary and her therapist, or she had two therapists, and between Mary and her abductor, if he did abduct her. And also the story of Mary and her mother and the relationship between the two of them, which led to the whole event happening in the first place. So it's sort of, as the novel progresses, it shows Mary coming to terms with the fallout from an elaborate game that backfired, basically. So I won't say any more.
Do you know, I'm intrigued. I'm absolutely
it is. It's
intrigued.
Really fascinating. And it was particularly because the novelist has used Freud's relationship with his patient Dora as the foundation for her novel to an extent. And so Mary is very much, she's studied at school, the Dora story.
Yeah.
And so it's like she's kind of reproduced the same scenario with her therapist. Of whether
no,
she's
well, I'm not familiar of the Dora. I'm not
right.
with the Dora
well,
story. So tell me about
very, very simply, the Dora story is that Freud was seeing this young woman as a patient, and it turned out that her story was that she had been abused or molested by an uncle.
Right.
I think it was. And Freud ended up deciding that it was just a sexual fantasy that she had made up and founded his theories about women's sexual fantasies on the case.
Mm.
So it's reproducing that, you know, the whole question of the budding sexuality of a teenager and those kind of lines that get crossed and
And boundaries.
Lack
of at times.
And also the extent to which the impact of whether you're believed or not has on a person.
Yeah, of course.
So I think the author deals with this very, very difficult topic incredibly sensitively, and it's a really fascinating psychological read. So if you like those kind of books that get into the mind of a character, I highly recommend it.
Great. Give me the title of that one again.
It was The Uses of Enchantment by Heidi Ulewicz.
The Uses of Enchantment by Heidi Ulewicz, and it was spelt, if you're looking for it, Heidi, obviously H-E-I-D-I, but it's spelt J-U-L-A-V-I-T-S, but The Uses of Enchantment. Wow, that actually sounds really intriguing. I think I might have to check that one out after the Carl Nixon, of course. And your final one for us, Rhiannon?
The final one is quite different. It's called Black Swan Rising by Lee Carroll. And Lee Carroll is actually a pseudonym which combines the names of a husband and wife team. So it was written by a husband and wife team, which is quite interesting in itself. This is one probably for those people looking for something else after Vampire Academy and Twilight.
Oh, okay.
Because it's got the vampire aspect in it, and the love affair between a mortal and a vampire.
Right.
So
is it teenagey then?
No, it's not. It's kind of it's very much an adult version. So it's more for the adult readers. It's in our adult collection, this one. But it's got fairies, vampires, demons, and true love, which makes it sound like it's the stuff of fairy stories.
Yeah.
But actually, it's set in a very real Manhattan with a heroine who's pretty nifty with a soldering iron.
Right. Okay.
So she's a jeweler of a sort.
I thought you were going to say she was a Lara Croft of
Manhattan. No, not quite. No. Well, you know, it maybe heads down that route a little bit as well. But it's essentially a book about finding your true self, expressing your creativity, and following your heart.
Mm.
So again, you know, it's a lighter read certainly than the other one.
Sure,
but it's not for the faint-hearted. Actually,
Goes, yeah, it's a little bit gruesome in bits.
Yeah, it goes into some really deep stuff as well. So just touches on it here and there.
Okay, hence it not being the teenage.
Yes, exactly.
Type of book. Yeah. Not saying that teenagers aren't deep in their own kind of special, unique way.
Yeah, but in terms of the book collection, we tend to be a bit more cautious about what books we put in the teenage section.
Absolutely, of course. Okay. Oh, well, thank you very much. So if you were having to give marks out of 10 for Black Swan?
I'd probably give it a 7.
Okay.
I think, whereas Uses of Enchantment would be more of an 8.5.
Oh, yeah. Really? That's quite quite high praise indeed from a librarian.
Yeah, definitely.
It is, because you don't give out your 8.5s very easily.
No.
Oh, well, listen, thank you very much for coming on air and talking to us.
Cool.
Really interesting stuff. So remember that the New Zealand Book Month, the event, the main event is Thursday the
24th of March.
But you want to pre-sell the tickets. So if you're interested in going, nip down to the library. Of course, you'll want to nip down to the library to get your own copy of the book, I'm sure, at some point. But that sounds like it's going to be really fun. And then, of course, there are the dramatisations of some of his plays. Well, they're not done a full dramatisation of them. They're doing them as rehearsed play readings.
That's right.
Which means that the actors still have the scripts, but they have some semblance of, they've worked on the characterization, and they kind of, and there's been some direction there, so they're moving around the stage. So really that's a case of you being able to see how the plays are interpreted, and that's also interesting on a different level.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thanks very much for coming in, Rhiannon.
Thank you, it's been great
to talk to you.
Great to be here.
We'll see you next month.
You're listening to Island Life, Waiheke People, Events and Issues, brought to you by Island, Art, Craft, Giftware, Clothing and Bric-a-Brac, Ocean View Road, Onirua.
Welcome to the studio. We have Lucinda Peterkin, who runs Dramability for us at the Artworks Theatre. And we have Forrest and Sean, a couple of her up-and-coming budding actors. So, Why are you here this week, Cindy, or this month, shall we say?
Yes, this month. Right, well, we've just broken from rehearsal to come down to the radio. Very conveniently, we were at Artworks rehearsing. So what we're doing right at the moment this morning is rehearsing for a play reading.
Mm-hmm.
This is where we're linking with the library as well, with the book festival. And we're picking up the fact that Carl Nixon is the author for Book of the Month.
Yes, we've just had Rhiannon in talking, doing. So you're really well built up, you guys, actually, because we've just had a whole piece from the library talking about Carl Nixon and the New Zealand Book of the Month and the fact that you guys are doing the reading of the rehearsed play readings. And I was explaining to the audience the difference between a play and rehearsed reading. So yeah, just keeping getting you up to speed, okay, there, guys.
Thank you. Yeah, because we haven't heard the radio this morning.
Because you've been rehearsing. Otherwise, of course, yep, all three of
obviously
you would have been.
Of
yes,
course.
Yes, Sean's of nodding. Course. He's nodding hard, yes.
So, yeah, so this morning we're having an amusing time because although the original play was done with just two actors, mm-hmm, well, one actress, one actor, and they played all 15 parts, we've made it a little bit easier by having six of them. And so the main parts are played by one person, but Sean, who's with us today, is playing a number. In fact, I think is it five customers in the fish and chip shop?
Oh my gosh.
And Forrest, who's here, she's lucky, she's only got one part, but it is the biggest part, so she's right, the main part of Rhea. So that's one of the things that we're doing this morning, and I know you've been talking about it, but it's on Wednesday the 9th of March at, yep, Rocky Bay Hall, and Saturday the 12th of March at Artworks. I think both 7 o'clock.
I think so, yes.
So that's one of the things we're doing at the moment. And then the other things that I'm up to are Shakespeare and Love, which is the adult course, and it's been fantastic. I did mention it on the radio a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, that's fine, you can mention it again. That's why I invited you in, don't worry.
But it's going really, really well, and I'm thoroughly enjoying working with so many keen adults and a really wide range of people.
Absolutely.
So it's really, really good fun. And I threw them in at the deep end on Thursday, slightly went on to the actual text, but we haven't cast it completely yet.
No, a couple of them actually, I must tell you this quick little story, a couple of them came. I was doing the Anything Arty show on Thursday night, and just when you finished rehearsals, a couple of them came into the studio, and we had an excellent Shakespearean discussion, actually, about all the sort of different nuances and the scripts and stuff. So it was very good. I won't tell any names. Shirin and a couple of other people as well. So, yeah, that was great. It prompted a very interesting discussion.
Well, that's the great thing. And Paolo, who's been away for 2 weeks, but he's back again this coming week. He's great because he's a physical devised, you know, theatre actor mainly, but has also worked on Shakespeare at the Globe. So it's great because you've got that mixture, which it's fantastic. But great because he said he felt that in a way that was his gap in his training, and so he took himself off to do the Shakespeare there to get himself better, which is just fantastic.
Awesome.
So he's great to work with,
yeah,
which also leads me on
to the third thing that I'm really excited
about that's only just been on, dates have just been confirmed.
Oh, hot off the presses.
Oh, yes, yes. Nothing has been advertised yet, although Forrest knows about it and a few of my teenagers. I was really, really wanting to promote more things for the older teenagers because,
yes,
they do their drama at school, but they're less keen on committing to lessons and they're busy at school and things. So
And social lives, of course.
Most
important. Mm-hmm, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And summer's a bad time to catch them. I'm sure Forrest will have something to say about this in a minute. But one of the companies that Paolo has, in fact, worked for a number of times is Red Leap Theatre Company.
Oh, yes.
Mm. And Red Leap Theatre Company are, in fact, the dates are in front of me. They're working in the final week of rehearsals for Paper Sky, A Love Story, which is their latest devised piece. And
because that's in the festival at the moment.
That's right. And it's on in Gleneden, at the Playhouse Theatre Gleneden, from the 4th to the 6th of March, and at the Mercury Theatre, 10th to the 14th of March. And I am very excited to say that we have finally confirmed that they will be coming to Waiheke to start off my project, which is going to be devising for teenagers. We'll have a better name for
That's your
eventually
working title.
My working title. So they're going to do a workshop, a full 2-day workshop on July the 16th and 17th.
Is that a weekend?
It's a weekend, and it's the beginning of the July holidays for students. So it's the first weekend of their holidays in July. So we'll be doing a weekend where they'll be running the workshops.
Oh, magnificent. Do you need any facilitators?
Might do. Because then what I'll be doing is afterwards, for the 2 weeks following, on Mondays, Wednesdays and Fridays, I'll be running workshops to pick up on all their ideas so that the teenagers can create their own piece of devised theatre.
Fab.
Building on the ideas that they've had
with Red Leap. That is, what an opportunity to work with...
Honestly, I'm very excited. I'm really excited. I'm going, oh, yes, yes, even though I know the one, I'm supposed to be the one teaching it, but just to be working with my
I'm excited just hearing about it. Well, yeah. They are, for those people that don't know Red Leap, they are an awesome, awesome Auckland-based theatre company that have done lots of really funky, innovative work, and to get them here on Waiheke is a real coup. So well done you for managing to get that organised. And I know that that's taken quite a lot of work to get that set up and stuff. So well done.
And also thanks to the Auckland's creative communities have meant that I've been able to get both Paolo for the Shakespeare and to get them in. So that the costs, we don't know exactly the costs of the workshop for the kids, but the costs will be kept down. It will be subsidised, and it won't be a hugely expensive thing to do.
Well, when you've got all the dates and everything, when you've got everything figured out, come back in and let me know on the Anything Arty show and on this, and we'll help you promote that and get some teenagers. God, I wish I was a teenager again. Do you think I could dress up, Forrest? What do you think?
Oh, you could give it a go.
Oh, I love you already. Right, anyway, now we've got two young people in here. We've got Sean and Forrest, and I wonder, do you think you can get a word in edgeways?
Try.
Well, I was thinking about it the whole time through, but...
I know, she was just leaning in between you, thrusting you out of the way there. It's just not that she likes to take centre stage, our Cindy. Anyway, so...
We love her enthusiasm.
We do. We encourage her enthusiasm. We go bless her, don't we, when she walks out of the room. But
absolutely.
So, tell me a bit... Do you know who's just walked in? It's Mr. Gary Wilton. He has turned up this month. Shall we give him a round of applause, everybody? I think a round of applause. Gary Wilton. Yeah, we'll be with you shortly, Mr. Wilton. Don't go disappearing off. Anyway, back to you guys. So, tell us a little bit about what are you doing?
Well, for the Two Fish in a Scoop?
Yeah.
Okay, well, in that one, I'm a main character, Rhea, and that's going to be quite interesting for me to play. Unlike Sean, I've only got one part, so he's really got
a big job. So you're a bit lazy. That's it. You're being lazy.
Oh, well, I've got a lot more lines. So. And I think it's going to be quite interesting. I have to play a character of Asian descent, so a Chinese father and Pakeha mother, and I have to say I'm quite Pakeha looking, so I'm going to be able to get really into character and dye my hair and, and have some goes with different types of makeup and all that kind of stuff to kind of get more into character. So
good,
that'll be quite exciting.
Are you doing some research into sort of the cultural background as well? Are you doing anything like that?
Yeah, a little bit. It's quite interesting, the whole Asian community in New Zealand. It's not something you really think about. Because it's just
well, if it's not part of your natural culture, no, and your natural heritage, no.
So it's just not really like a big deal.
Absolutely. So but, isn't it fascinating?
But in this play, it's quite a big deal for the character. So the character really sees the world a whole lot differently to how I would.
Yeah, what an excellent opportunity. Yeah, cool. Okay, thanks. And Sean, what are you doing?
I will be playing a few small roles, and the challenge there is to distinguish them because they are actually all within the same scene.
Oh,
so yeah, it's not very easy.
Isn't she mean?
It is a bit mean, and so I have a few challenges. There's the changing the characters very quickly, and being a Canadian, I also for at least one part have to master a New Zealand accent.
Ooh.
So
tomato.
Yeah, that's just the beginning. And so
I wish you well, my friend.
It's because, not easy.
Yeah, it's not. No. I struggle. Yeah, with if I ever try to do that. In fact, I'm rubbish. I was trained for years in it, and I still can't do it.
Well, I'm going to do my best. But the characters are really fun, and the play is actually. I think all of the people that Lucinda brought in were just really kind of taken with the play itself. It's actually a very good New Zealand play. It's a very little play, and it's very accessible. And I think we all had a. You know, it's both poignant and kind of fun and funny. So I think it's a good one.
Awesome. Oh, well, listen, thank you very much. I can't wait to see it.
Thanks.
Really can't wait to see it.
We'll expect to see you in the theatre.
You will. Don't worry. Well done. Thank you very much for coming in. Forrest, was that quite as nerve-wracking as you thought?
Not quite.
Okay, well, listen, keep me informed of what's going on, and do let me know if you get involved in any other arty farty projects, because I'll want to know. Okay, well, thank you very much for coming in. Thanks, Lucinda.
Thank you.
Well, welcome, Gary, to the radio show that is Island Life on Waiheke Radio on 88.3 and 107.4 FM.
Thanks, Emma. Great to get that round of applause earlier on.
Yeah.
What is that Julian Clary says?
I don't know.
Nothing quite like a warm hand on my entrance.
Now, yes, absolutely. And that was why I... we had a couple of tracks playing because Gary caught me so unawares as he did come in around the side of the studio that I smacked myself in the head and then the eye in a spectacular attempt to put my headphones on whilst making sure that I had a chair in the other hand to fend off Mr. Gary Wilton and his witty repartee. So anyway, how are you?
Ah, I'm wonderful, thanks. Beautiful day.
It is. It's a gorgeous day. And what have you been doing so far today? You said you've been very, very active already.
Oh, I've actually been doing gardening, and that's quite unusual for me because I firmly believe that life's too short for gardening.
Right.
It might be one of those things that would be a good idea to take up once you start slowing down, but
I see.
I'm not planning to do that.
You're not planning. Right, okay. It's a good job that Mr. James from Green Landscape Space had left before you came in and made that scandalous comment as he was in doing his monthly gardening slot. What I'm thinking now for next month is I could organise a duel on the steps, or actually there's the little artwork stage there, if you continue to make such difficult remarks.
Oh, it'd be like a Marvel comic, wouldn't it, me and him battling?
Yeah, absolutely. It'd be like that scene out of Bridget Jones' Diary. I love that when they end up in the waterfall fighting and the two toffs are fighting. Not that I'm calling either of you toffs, but I can't really imagine and wouldn't like to imagine either of you in a full-on fisticuffs fight, but a little sort of, ooh, I'll kick you in the ankles, I'll scratch your eyes out. I could imagine, actually.
Rolling around in jelly and just our budgie smugglers.
Okay, can you please... The time... is quite early, and there will be people in here, little people listening.
Mm-hmm.
So what was that song, that really, really good song of the 80s? What's the matter, you? Hey, shut up your face.
Oh, okay.
That one. Anyway, so what have you come on to talk about other than rude things that are getting me all flustered?
I wanted to give a quick plug, first of all, for the Waiheke Coastal Classic Fun
That's
Run
right.
and Walk, which yep. is on Saturday 12th of March, 2 weeks from today.
Mm-hmm.
That's the off-road fun run and walk that I run with friend Gary Brown and the Waiheke Sports Club. We call it Waiheke's favourite off-road race. Mm-hmm. It's not quite on the same scale as Wharf to Wharf, but getting there. We had about 200 people do it last year.
200?
Yeah,
really?
We have a 5K, a 12K and an 18K event. We start down at Matiatia at 10:30 on the Saturday morning. It's $25 for the 5K up through $30.35 for the 10 and 18.
And where do the funds go?
And the funds go 95% of everything that we take goes to youth sports on the island.
Great.
Either the league or the netball through the sports club, so the youth team's there. Or this year, our chosen charity that we're supporting is the Jiu-Jitsu Club, the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu Club, which Chris Bailey and Dave Tien are setting up, ostensibly to give some of the young people on the island a constructive and focused way of getting rid of some of that teenage energy.
Oh, wow. So where are they doing that?
At the rec centre, I believe.
Do you know when it's running or any details?
I don't, but those of you who know Chris or Dave Tien will be able to look them up in the phone book, I guess, and
sure.
give them a ring.
And if you don't, then I guess the rec centre will be promoting it as well. So
yeah.
ring up and ask there or pop in and ask them when this is. Because that actually sounds like a great idea.
Yeah, and Chris does a lot of work for the island, so it's nice to be able to help something that he's doing.
Absolutely. Oh, well, good for you. Mm. And so give us the date again of that.
Saturday, 12th of March, so 2 weeks today in the morning. You can register on the day down at Matiatia, or you can go online, www.waihikicoastalclassic.co.nz. Just Google Waiheke Coastal Classic, and you'll get it. And I guess the other thing I should do is say a big thanks to Stu Farquhar from Kiwi Mini Diggers, who's been our main sponsor for the third year in a row.
Oh, good for him.
And because of his generosity, we're able to give $500 up front to the chosen charity, the Jiu-Jitsu, and also offer a $500 spot prize on the day.
Wow.
So not only do you get a to be part of that event, to know that 95% of what you pay will be going straight back to youth sports, but you get a chance to win $500 cash too.
Excellent. Oh, awesome. So they can either pay on register on the day, or they can register online. I presume you would prefer people to register online beforehand.
Yep. And it's cheaper if you do, it's $10 cheaper if you do it by next Friday.
Oh, so there's an early bird special.
Yeah. It goes up by $10 basically from the 25 to 35.
Right.
30 to 40, 35 to 45 as of the last week.
Okay, so if you know you're going to do that, that's the best thing. Just give out the website again, Gary.
Just Google Waiheke Coastal Classic.
And that will come up.
Yeah.
Okay, so, and you can register and pay. Can you pay securely online?
Yeah.
Okay, All right, so that sounds really good. Now, the other thing that we wanted to talk about was the beach races and what's going on there.
On Otanghi Beach and the problem that we've had over the last few weeks with the horse mussels there. It's one of those things that it's obviously very sad for the beach racers.
Yeah.
The beach race committee had to make their decision there in advance, and I think they've probably made the only decision that they could.
Which is
to cancel the beach races this year, which is a terrible shame. But at the end of the day, you can't, if nature decides it wants to do something, it's pretty hard to beat it. So I just wanted to talk a little bit about what I know about the situation there.
That'd be great, because lots of people are talking about the horse mussels, and there's lots of different opinions and different ideas going around. So let's get somebody that actually is involved in it and knows what they're talking. Well, I'm assuming you know what you're talking about, Gary, but actually that's quite a broad statement there. But let's ask Gary what he thinks.
I have been accused of being 90% confidence, 10% accuracy, but we're maybe 50-50 this time around. And that's one of the interesting things, that it's not a known. There are a lot of variables there. There are a lot of unknowns. The experts haven't come across this very often. It's pretty much unprecedented in Auckland region on this scale for that many horse mussels to come in. And we've estimated something like 1 million horse mussel shells on the beach in the dump from the first storm. 1 million shells.
Oh my goodness!
50 truckloads of shells, big trucks. So starting from the beginning, we had two storms, two weekends in a row before Labour weekend. The first storm came with a king tide, and the marine biologists in town tell me that they're 95% sure that the combination of that big storm surge with a king tide would have loosened mussels from the mussel beds out in Otanghi Bay. So it seems that horse mussels live pointing upwards in massive colonies out in the bay. Those colonies may ebb and flow over the years in terms of their numbers, and the divers around the island will tell you that there are some very big mussel beds out there. Apparently the ones that have broken free and come on the shore are juvenile horse mussels, because they're only about 20 centimeters long, and the adult horse mussels are nearer 40 centimeters long. So what we believe is that the juveniles grow around the edge. So as the colony expands, new shells come around the edge. So they're then more exposed to wave movement and less mature in terms of being able to hang on. One of the fascinating things is that nobody really seems to be able to tell you what the meaty bit of a horse mussel looks like. And my theory is that that must be the bit that hangs onto the seafloor. And when it comes loose, then it all disintegrates and the shell... The shell washes up, which is good because it means there's less of a health hazard, you know, and less of a smell with them coming in. They're just shells. So how do we handle them? That was difficult. And the first thing we wanted to do is just wait and see and get a feeling for how many were coming in each day. And we didn't want to spend a lot of time removing them all. And then keep coming in.
They're coming in on a constant rate. I'm unaware. I thought they came in, that was it. They're just there. They came in on once, but they're actually replenishing. Are they?
Our feeling is that there were a massive number that were ripped off the seabed during the storm. The divers on the island told us, although there was that massive dumping, there were still a lot of horse mussel shells washing around on the seabed loose after the storm. So we were getting a few more each day, but it sort of calmed down a bit. So we, after looking at all the alternatives and testing a few things, decided that we would crush them on site. And that's been pretty successful in that those crushed shells are dissipating into the sand and into the sea. It does leave a lot of sharp bits of shell in the sand, and that's not ideal, but really we're accelerating nature there. We looked at trucking them off the beach and away to a dump somewhere, and there were a couple of places that would take them on the island and use them, but the physical movement of 50 truckloads up and down on a tangy beach is a major issue for things like cockle beds and other seafood shellfish. And the fact was that it wasn't just a matter of lifting shells off, you would have been lifting a lot of sand off as well. You need pretty comprehensive resource consents for that sort of thing, and it was getting more and more complicated. And for every action, there's a reaction,
of course,
and you can cause more trouble than you can solve.
You can end up actually exasperating the situation and making it a lot worse, and then you end up with a whole load of other sort of environmental issues and problems.
That's right.
So with the crushing and stuff, I mean, I can understand what the rationale is, but what I've heard a few people talking about is that you know, kids can't play on the beach, and I've only heard this anecdotally, but somebody said it was either Charlie Farley's or what's the other one called that I always forget?
Beachfront Cafe.
Thank you, Beachfront. That they last weekend they treated 30 people with cut feet. I mean, is there...
Yeah. I mean,
have we got notices up for tourists? Because, I mean, locals tend to know a little bit more and be slightly better informed, if not always accurate, but we know that there's something going on. What about these busloads and boatloads of tourists that we're getting?
It's a good question, and you'd need to put a lot of signs up, and you'd have to be quite clever in your wording of your signs, but it's back to that no action without a reaction. You know, then we get people who say, you're telling everybody our beach is dangerous, you're putting our house prices down, you know, you're giving Onatangi a bad name. People need to make their own decisions. So we've been working closely with the local board on this, and that's been a good experience.
Has it?
And we've been making a joint decision, all going down, looking at the situation, looking at the options, coming to an agreed decision, and we've decided not to go for signage at the moment.
That was discussed.
Yeah, and you know, we're constantly reviewing. Basically, sure. It's a movable feast. We've had more shells than with the cyclone coming past last couple of days.
Yeah, whether there'd be any.
And we'll probably go back out and groom and crush again next week, and then see from there how many shells are still on the seafloor.
Right. So, what's your advice then to people?
Be very careful, particularly with your kids on a tangy beach without shoes. But keep going back, you know, keep supporting the cafes there. They do a great job.
They do.
You know, this is and go and have a look. You know, this is an incredible natural phenomenon. You know, it was breathtaking to see a million shells up on the beach.
I mean, on a tangy, they've just had a real rough trot, haven't they, with the batch. And then this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously, you know, it's all comparable.
Yeah, all relative.
With what's happened with our families and neighbours down in Christchurch this week. But what's the plan, the future plan then? I mean, have you had any of the biologists, for instance, marine biologists, say how long they think this may continue? Is this something that is, you know, unquantifiable? I think it is. My understanding of it is that it's slightly unquantifiable. That we won't actually be able, because we don't know enough about them, the horse mussels, we won't be able to tell exactly.
Yeah, it's fascinating because sometimes in life it feels like that everybody knows everything about something, you know, and if you actually Google horse mussel shells and go on Wikipedia, it doesn't actually tell you too much. I suspect it's because there's no eating there at all. They've never been of great interest to people. It's a very inexact science. We could throw scientists at it, but you'd have to have people down diving along the seafloor with no reason to believe that there's anything else.
I mean, I'm not advocating that we do that and spend that kind of those kind of resources on that. What I'm trying to get across, or to question you really, is, is it unquantifiable? Is it such a sort of mystery? Or do we know, do you know what, the breeding season will finish in March and we won't have this again? What's your understanding?
Well, I've probably told you just about everything I know this morning.
Yeah.
it I think the amount of resource we put into it will be proportionate to the amount of problem it turns out to be. Mm-hmm. So if it continues to be a major problem, then we will need to put more resource in.
That's a really good point. More, and you said that you've worked well with the community board.
The local board, yeah.
Yeah, they've been working well and mm-hmm. they've been very supportive.
Yeah, and that's been a good experience so far.
That's really good to hear, isn't it? Because there was some controversy around when they were all elected. So it's really good to hear that things have settled down and that they're working well, as you know, most of us anticipated it would settle down, and they'd work well with Ireland. And of course, they're here to support us and help us when we do have issues such as these. So. Just to reiterate, the beach races have been cancelled.
Mm-hmm.
No rain. No, well, it can't be a rain date because it's not a rain issue, is it? There's no sort of.
Yeah, cancelled, not postponed.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's my understanding.
Okay. All right. Well, listen, thank you very much for coming in, Gary. And a pleasure as always to talk to you. Look forward to talking to you next month. And hopefully you will have some more information. If it hasn't been completely resolved by then, the horse muscle issue.
Oh, and there's always something topical to talk about on Waiheke, isn't there?
There is. And just a quick plug again, just a quick reminder, the Coastal Classic.
Waiheke Coastal Classic Fun Run and Walk, Saturday 12th of March, 2 weeks today. Go to waihekecoastalclassic.co.nz and you can find out more, pay online and enter.
You've been listening to the interviews from last Saturday's Island Life, our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. Island Life is brought to you every Saturday morning from 10 till 12, and the interviews are replayed on Wednesdays at 7 o'clock. They're also available as a download from our website, www.waihekeradio.org.nz. Island Life is brought to you by Island, the shop with Waiheke's most eclectic collection of local art, craft, giftware, clothing and bric-a-brac. Island, Ocean View Road, Oneiroa.